Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being a part of the show. Welcome, Outcast. Let me take a look at the calendar. It's not Monday. It's not Tuesday. It's not Wednesday. It's not Thursday. That could mean only one thing. Baby, it's your weekend. WCBS in New York with your cousin Brucey. It's your weekend. Thank you. We begin with an article from the Babylonian Bee, my favorite source of news. Actually, the Babylon Bee. Canadians furious over new Don't Say Eh bill. From Ottawa, a swarm of protesters descended on Parliament Hill today to protest the recently proposed and controversial Don't Say Eh bill. Eh? 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 Chanted Zamboni mechanic and protest organizer Bob Bergeron, adding, I've said it my whole life, and I'm going to keep saying it. None of these oppressive anti-eh hosers can tell me otherwise. Member of Parliament Luc Lepet, who originally authored the bill, was bewildered by the opposition. I don't know what they're all talking about, eh? This bill's about tariffs, eh, on industrial adhesives, but somebody declared it's, you know, don't say A, and everybody flew off the handle, eh? It doesn't say A anywhere in the bill, eh? Protesters wouldn't be swayed by the lawmakers' explanations. However, they vowed to continue their protests all across the country, including hockey games and the Canadian Academy Awards, which apparently is a thing. Said Bergeron, eh? Well, you know, we're not going to allow them anti-eh bigots to deny our identity. We're going to say A, and we're going to teach our children to say it, preferably starting as young as possible, like between kindergarten and third grade. Also wouldn't hurt to sneak in it in at Disneyland and Disney World, eh? Eh? A couple emails I want to get to from listeners. The first one, I'll keep both listeners anonymous. This gentleman writes in, I have heard you on several podcasts, and just wanted to encourage you and thank you for the book. I am a Christian and a pastor, and it's hard to find someone with similar beliefs and attitudes. It's strange how so many flat earthers are so sarcastic and demeaning to those who can't see it. Thanks for a breath of fresh air. Stay positive and trusting in Christ, the only Savior. That email really cheered me up. I thought, that's it. That's who I'm writing the book for. People like that gentleman. And he's right about flat earthers. Many of them are condescending and arrogant. There was a woman by the name of Patricia Steer. She had a flat earth YouTube channel called Flat Earth and Other Hot Potatoes. And she tried to organize flat earthers into a group and have get-togethers, and all these guys just turned on her. There is a real condescending spirit in the flat earth movement. It's one of the reasons I don't join any movement at all. Because I remember 6 years ago when I wasn't a believer, who am I to judge others and say, you should believe this. Believe whatever you want. All I'm doing is just offering an alternative way of looking at things. That's all. Nothing more. Nothing less. One more email I do want to touch on. This is from another listener. He writes in, Hi Lee, I'm writing to thank you for making my mind receptive to the flat earth truth. I've been listening to RBN broadcasts by different hosts since mid-2016. Hang on, I have to have a Ted Kennedy moment. Era, the earth is flat. All right, I'll begin again. I'm writing to thank you for making my mind receptive to the flat earth truth. I've been listening to RBN broadcasts by different hosts since mid-2016. I started listening to your show in June of 2021 and have been a loyal fan since then. The idea of a flat earth at first was so ridiculous to me due to my being brainwashed by the heliocentric globe BS, But listening to your show started to open my mind to new ideas, so I began to do my own research. I've watched hours of videos by Mark Sargent, Eric Dubay, Rob Skiba. But most importantly, I finished reading the Book of Enoch, and that extra biblical text finally convinced me that we live on a flat earth with a dome. That revelation brought me much closer to Yahweh, and now I know He is only about 3,000 miles above and watching over me. Hallelujah. Many, many thanks to you. You're doing a great job. And may the Lord give you the incentive and courage to host this show for as long as possible to bring the truth to the masses. Last week, I finished reading the Book of Jasher and the Book of Jubilee. So my journey from globe Earth to flat took about 6 months. By the way, as a side note, that is about how long it takes. 6 months. On average. It takes that long to unravel all the indoctrination. He continues, the other thing I'd like to bring to your attention is about the Federal Reserve. There's someone named Tim Benz, and he felt that the Lord had called him to go around the world to destroy all the sacrificial altars of the Nephilim. He ended up on Jekyll Island and wondering why God had brought him there. He spoke to someone in charge of the museum on the island and was told that John D. Rockefeller built an altar, or rather the building, above the site of a Native Indian village. And these people practice human infant sacrifice. And the Rockefeller building with the parlor was built on top of the altar. The meeting to form the Federal Reserve, the charter, was held in that parlor. Nothing happens by accident. Satan has been doing his demonic acts ever since he tricked Adam and Eve in the garden. I've attached a video by Rob Skiba with this information, and we will play part of that video, which is excellent, by Rob Skiba. Essentially, if you believe what this gentleman says, the person who takes care of, the caretaker of Jekyll Island, where they chartered the Federal Reserve documents that created the Federal Reserve, is over a Canaanite altar that was hosted by the Nephilim, where they conducted child sacrifices. I had never heard of that until tonight. So I definitely will play that clip for you coming up in the second half of the show. This one really caught my attention. Praise and Prick. Pennsylvania pays churches to convince members to get vaccinated. This is from a lady by the name of Beth Relee, and she just wrote this article. Many have chosen not to get the COVID-19 shots, have cited religious objections. Now Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's administration wants church leaders to bring vaccination events into churches. Pennsylvania's public health leaders want to harness the power of community trust in statewide faith-based organizations to convince folks to get the COVID injection. That is according to the mission statement of the Faith-Based Organization Coalition, which is being formed under the state's Department of Health and is expected to launch on April 11th. The state of Pennsylvania aims to reduce vaccine hesitancy through the local innovations in vaccine equity in Pennsylvania. It's a grant program that pays churches and nonprofits to speak with their people and persuade them to get vaccinated. Oh, the payoff? $10 for each person-to-person outreach, including direct phone calls, direct text messages, direct social media messages, door-knocking campaigns, and anything that involves a one-on-one dialogue promoting the COVID injection. $10 per encounter. The church or other nonprofit gets an additional $10 for each person who gets the shot. It's called Live PA. It's a collaboration between the Wolf Administration's Office of Advocacy and Reform and the Department of Health and Human Services, working closely with United Way. The funding comes federally. Oh, what a surprise. Go ahead, Ted. Era, let me guess, the Center for Disease Control. Yeah, the CDC. $4 million allocated to nonprofit organizations and $630,000 for faith-based organizations. In Pennsylvania, the CDC, are paying $10 if you just talk to a person and $10 if they get the shot, and they're doing it in churches. Let that sink in like a tea bag in hot water. Let it steep. This is one of the reasons I have such a hard time with church. Even though I've been a Christian and not a good one for over 40 years, I have a real hard time with church. It's the whole 501c3. Back in the 50s, Lyndon Johnson figured out a way to grab the churches by the short hairs, and that's called the 501c3, which allows churches to not pay any taxes. In exchange, when the government says jump, the church says how high. And that has been instituted, ingrained in the culture for over 60 years. That's just the way it is. Most churches are businesses. I don't go to church to participate in a business. There's only been one church I've actually felt a part of, and that was many years ago in Brownsville, Texas. The pastor of this particular vineyard was a child advocate lawyer. Many Sundays, he would even forget to do a collection. He was so indifferent to the growth and prosperity of his church that I was attracted to that indifference. He had a heart for God and children. He didn't care about materialism. He was the real deal. Other than that, I don't belong anywhere. I don't know about you. Here in God's Waiting Room, Florida, I did belong to a home church off and on for a while, and I really loved the guy who ran it, but he passed on about a year ago. And before that, the only other church organization I really belonged to was a home church in Austin, where this woman, who I secretly nicknamed the Oracle, held a home church every Monday night. People would get together, eat, share, pray. She also had a deliverance ministry. I went through deliverance with her. I learned about deliverance and has since done some myself, which is what I want to get into. But other than that, I really don't like church. And this, praise and prick, Pennsylvania pays churches to convince members to get vaccinated. That's right from the pit of hell. Pure evil. That the quote-unquote church would get in bed with Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, J&J, and be a whore. And that's what it is. Any church in Pennsylvania that participates in this is a whore. Other than that, they're doing great. Last night I was listening to the Jeff Berwick monologue, which came on after mine. And he was going on and on about NPCs. If you don't know what an NPC is, it's a non-player character, an individual who's a sheep and doesn't have any opinion on anything except what the hive mind tells them what to believe. Last night after the show, I went shopping at Walmart, which I do at 10 o'clock and later. They close at 11. The idea is to finish shopping about 10 minutes to 11 when no one's there, so I don't have to see or talk to hardly anyone. I can't take it anymore. I don't know where you're at with all of this, but I really can't. In my tolerance level, I spend so much time alone with Stormy. I don't have tolerance for people like I should. And I know I don't have the love for people that I should. That's just where I'm at. All I saw last night were NPCs, people wearing masks everywhere. And this is Florida, where you don't have to do any of that. They're all, not all, but a lot of them were muzzled. While I'm checking out, this guy saunters up to the next register, and he's buying a 75-inch flat screen at 10:50 in the evening. And I just began to envision this guy sitting on his couch watching thousands of hours of brainwashing garbage and just becoming even more zombified. The division has taken place. If you're not on one side or the other by now, I can't help you. Which brings us to the book Morningstar's Tale. It was 79 pages. It's now 132 pages. It's available for purchase at Amazon. However, if you don't want to buy the book, that's cool. I'm not depending on it to live. I got a grant from a church in Pennsylvania. Go to the website, Morningstar's Tale, TALE.com, and under the blog, you'll find the entire book. Not only did I re-edit the first 10 chapters for the sixth time, I think, maybe the fifth, but I also added 53 pages. And those 53 pages mostly deal with transhumanism and the vaccine. I took all the articles I've written over the last year and a half to 2 years, took the parts that are not already in the book, and put them in the book. So what you'll get is not only the original, but you'll get an additional 53 pages that have been updated, including all the vaccination and transhumanism stuff. And it's free. Just go to the website, morningstarstale.com. Send it to whoever you like, anyone you like. Do an email blast. I just want to get the word out there. When you send it, don't include any kind of cover letter or an explanation. And if they come back and start asking you questions, all you got to say is, do you believe we landed on the moon? And if they say yes, you say, conversation over. Do you believe we landed on the moon? No. Okay, one more. Are you injected? Yes. You're not ready. You got to pass those two hurdles first. You got to believe we didn't go to the moon, and you got to be jab free. However, if you did get the jab and you've repented, okay. But that's it. I don't want you to have to endure the ridicule, the mocking that I have over the last few years concerning these topics. And the best way to avoid it is when they call you, don't take the call. Remember, not only do I not put callers on the air, you don't have to put one on your phone. And when they come back at you, spam them, delete it. Don't lose your peace of mind over this. It's not that big of a deal. On Judgment Day, the Lord isn't going to ask you whether the earth is round or flat. It's not a salvation issue, but it sure is a lot of fun to talk about and irritate the evolutionists. The Perfect Storm!
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. and knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Recent observation, viewing Mr. Axl Rose, I would change the title of that song to "Sweet Cinnabon of Mine." No crickets, really. Sweet Cinnabon. You know, because he's getting fat. He's not really an Axl. He's kind of like a whole unibody. You know, sweet Cinnabon of mine. Okay, thank you. One of the... Now you're just pissing me off. Okay, one more. Okay. I'm real happy that I'm no longer posting anything. I know that sounds weird, but I felt pressure to always give you content. Now you got the book. Just go read the book and leave me alone. For example, today I was tempted. Here in God's waiting room, they had a manned space launch from Cape Canaveral where four astronauts sat on a bench and pretended they were pushing buttons. I was just laughing the whole time. I'm watching the launch while I'm working. I'm watching it on YouTube and taking horrible phone calls. I have to take phone calls at that job. I get paid for it. So, just watching these astronauts pretend to push buttons while they're not going into space. And then they did it again. They show a split screen where one camera shows the Earth curved and the other one shows a straight edge indicating it's flat. I've probably posted similar stories with videos four times. I'm just tired of doing it, and I'm glad I don't have to. You know what I did instead? I sat on the back porch and tried to figure out why the squirrels were eating all the seeds from the bird feeder because I got a new stick. I was hanging the bird feeder from the gutter, and the squirrels would hang upside down like a Russian gymnast and just start eating all the bird food. So I thought, I'll get a bird feeder stick. You know, the stick you put the bird feeder on? Well, lo and behold, the bird seed is being eaten at a precipitous rate. Finally, I look out the corner of my eye, and the squirrel is crawling up the pole like a crackhead looking for a rock. And I'm just like, I didn't know squirrels could do that. So I have crackhead squirrels stealing all my bird seed. And I thought that was funny. And that was a lot more fun than posting a story. Then, today is just beautiful. In God's waiting room, it was like 75. This is the reason you moved to Florida. The 60-pound cat, the indoor cat, I have a 60-pound indoor cat. It's disguised as a greyhound. And it's just hanging out with me all day, which is fine. I get it. But during my breaks, I said, come on, let's go outside and play. We'll go outside and play, okay? So finally, she comes out, and she just lays on the ground. I start cleaning up her poop. I turn around, and she's back inside laying on her pad. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? It's a cat. It's a 60-pound indoor cat. But what I really love about her is that she doesn't care. We have this mutual apathy that I think we gravitate to. That's why we enjoy each other's company. And then just before the sunset tonight, I tried one more time, and she finally did come outside and understood that I wanted to play with her. And so she pretended she was attacking me, and that was enjoyable. And that's my life. Oh, my gosh, that is my life. Oh, no, that can't be it. Hey, check this out. Fed up managers declare working from home is over, as 77% say they'll fire you or cut your pay for not coming back to the office. Working from home, he read, it was fun while it lasted. About 3 out of 5 managers believe that remote work is on the wane and workers will be back in the office full-time by the end of the year. Not this worker. After 2 years of working remotely, the idea of going anywhere to work with others and to wear pants? No. I haven't worn... The last time I wore pants was during a required company training seminar. I wore jeans, which I hadn't worn for 2 years. I've been living in sweats and shorts for the last 2 years, and it's wonderful. Now, I'll just quit. The perfect storm.
Remember when I told you about 5G radiation? Remember that I told you that COVID was a hoax? But I just want to say that I told you so.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again, it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise, to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
It's the time of the season when love runs. Let me try with pleasured hands
to take you in this time to
promised lands
to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for love.
Hey, Cousin Brucey on WCBS in New York and the Zombies in Time of the Season. Going back to 1969. Let's go up to 2022 and, you know, the zombies are back. Once everybody takes this graphene oxide, it gets in their body and everyone's going to self-replicate and turn into broadcasting antennas filled with black goo. And at some point, they're going to be dead and they're going to be alive. Yeah, that's your Cousin Brucey telling you they're going to be dead and alive. So don't you take that jab. Don't you go to that church in Pennsylvania and take that jab, because they're going to get $20 out of your hide. The church is going to get $20 and then... Okay, I'm back. The email that I received earlier tonight, the one alluding to the Federal Reserve, man, that is some wild stuff. Check this out. Someone named Tim Bentz felt that the Lord had called on him to go around the world to destroy all the sacrificial altars of the Nephilim. He ended up on Jekyll Island, which we know is where the Federal Reserve was founded. And Rob Skiba weaves a story about how it all came to pass. So let's give it a listen right now. Here's Rob Skiba. Go ahead, Mike.
This one most recently caught my attention. The creature from Jekyll Island. In 1910, the Federal Reserve was created. Right? It was conceived in 1910. This is a quote from G. Edward Griffin, who wrote a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. He says, "The Federal Reserve is a hybrid organization. It is a partnership between the federal government and the private banks. When you look at it deeper than that, its essence is neither as a government agency nor a private company. In reality, it is a cartel. And he goes on to expose it. Well, this is an interesting connection that I recently stumbled upon related to the things that we've just been talking about and looking at. Notice that G. Edward Griffin says that the Federal Reserve is a hybrid organization. He didn't mean this the way that I'm looking at it right now, but I doubt that he knows how true that statement actually was. After the last Future Congress conference, which was a big conference we just had here in Dallas in January, I met a man named Tim Bentz. And Tim had experience in finding and destroying Nephilim altars in the Middle East. He'd find these Canaanite altars that were being dug up in different places in the Middle East. And the Bible says, destroy those things, tear those things down. And God has called him to do that, to go and wage spiritual warfare, I mean hardcore spiritual warfare, against these ancient demonic sites and structures. And I recently had him on my radio show, and you might definitely want to check out, it's a two-part radio interview that I did with Tim Bentz. If you go to blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/revolutionary radio, and just scroll down and you'll see it's one of the featured episodes. It was called Canaanite Altars and the Federal Reserve. You definitely want to listen to that one. He told me that after dealing with some pretty hardcore spiritual warfare in the Middle East, that the Lord actually called him to go to Jekyll Island, which is where the Federal Reserve was conceived. He went and learned something very interesting about the Fed. He discovered that the buildings that were now there, that are there now, were built over an American Indian village. But this was no ordinary American Indian village or tribe. While there, he met a guy who was in charge of a museum on the island, and I'm just going to play a clip from that interview. This is what happened when he met this individual from the museum. At this time, when he first got there to Jekyll Island, he didn't know. He's like, Lord, why am I here? Why are you bringing me to Jekyll Island? And then he found out why the Lord brought him there.
He takes me back to the museum, and he said, we got a lot of stuff on the Indians. He said, this was main community for a tribe of Indians that don't exist anymore. And that tribe was called the Timucas. He said the Jekyll Island Club was actually built on top of everything that the Indians had. So they just kind of wiped the village out and built the club on top of it. So wherever the chief's house was, there was a cottage now. Wherever the council house was, there was now the Jekyll Island Hotel. And he said, everything that's built and visible today is actually sitting right on top of something that was significant in the Indian village when it existed. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, you know, let's look at the museum. I want to see some of the Indian stuff. So we're looking at arrowheads and spear tips. And he said, do you want to see the bones? And I said, well, yeah. You know, that sounds, you don't get to see a skeleton very often. I said, are they where we can actually see them, or are they buried? He said, no, they're visible. So they had a burial site that they had been very respectful for when they built the museum. When they found a burial site, they didn't move the bones. They left them where they were. And so I'm looking at four skeletons of the Timucua chiefs. And I realized, man, these guys are really tall. And I commented to the guy that, you know, how tall are these guys? They look unusually large. And he said, yeah, they're all about 8 or 8.5 foot tall. He said, all the Timucas were unusually tall, even the women. And he said, oh, by the way, I've got a painting that actually shows the Indians. I said, well, I'd like to see that painting then. So he pulls that out. I'm looking at it. And it shows the Indians and all their regalia, and they're dancing around and having some kind of a ceremony. And then I see an altar, and it looks a whole lot like the one that I had dealt with in the Middle East. And I'm looking at the picture, and I'm going, is this an altar? Is this stone like something they're sacrificing on? Because this guy's holding babies in his hands in this picture. He said, yeah, they're cutting those babies. They're hacking those babies up in that painting. And so when you look at the details, two of the shamans or chiefs are holding a baby up by the ankles, and they're whacking their heads off and spilling the blood on this altar. Mm. And I'm like, sir, I don't want to be disrespectful of your training in archaeological understanding and history, but I don't know of any native tribe that did what I'm seeing here, unless it was an act of war. And this is really, really unusual. And I've seen this type of scene with artifacts over in the Middle East. And I've seen weapons like this over in the Middle East. Well, he was quite interested in that because he loves Native American history, but he's starting to question, now, maybe I need to dig into this more. That was his comment. So I said, at that point, then I thought, I believe this is why I'm here. I needed to see this and hear about this. At this point, I'm not that concerned about the financial stuff anymore. I'm wanting to know, where is this altar? And so I asked him, I said, can you take me to this altar? He said, I can take you to the altar, but you can't see it. I said, why can't I see it? Is it buried? He said, no, it's not buried, but it has a house built on top of it. I said, who would be crazy enough to build their house on top of a blood sacrifice altar? He said, well, Rockefeller was. So
nice.
We go over there, and he's got the keys, though. So we go into the house, and he takes me into the parlor. He said, you're standing right on top of the altar right now. This is the room that is built on top of it.
Now, this parlor, that's where those guys, J.P. Morgan and all those guys, actually conceived of the Federal Reserve, right? Right over that altar?
That's exactly right. It's the room that they were sitting in when they drew up the entire legislation and planned to pass it that became the Federal Reserve Act.
Wow.
So this was the conception of the Federal Reserve banking system on the parlor sitting on top of a blood sacrifice altar.
You wonder why our banking system and our monetary system is so corrupt? It was literally conceived over a Canaanite blood altar. And Rockefeller put his house right on top of it, and the parlor where the whole thing was conceived of was right above the blood altar. The Federal Reserve. Talk about a creature from Jekyll Island. G. Edward Griffin, I don't think, even knows about that. but his title for his book was appropriate, for sure. Let's move along. In the 1900s, we have an individual here named Aleister Crowley. In January through March of 1918, famed occultist Aleister's magical experiments called the Amalantra workings, in which he is said to have opened a portal to another dimension, allowing an entity, or a demon, I believe, named Lamb to enter through it. This is 1918, okay? And this is the drawing that Crowley made of the creature named Lamb in 1918. It looks curiously similar to the alien grays of pop culture today. He created a portal through which, an interdimensional portal through which this creature entered. Then in 1946, something else happened called the Babylon Working. Supposedly, Crowley's portal was further enlarged by Jet Propulsion Laboratory founder and rocket fuel scientist Jack Parsons and Scientology and Dianetics founder L. Ron Hubbard in March of 1946 at a location that later became known as Area 51. Their experiment was called the Babylon Working. Like the Amalantra Working, it was based on ceremonial sex magic. Unlike Crowley, however, they were not as adept at opening and closing portals. Theirs apparently stayed open, and the modern UFO era began 1 year later, the same year Crowley died, 1947. And of course, that leads us to this location right here, Roswell, New Mexico. Now, that's not the actual place that the alleged crash took place. It apparently happened further to the northwest. Roswell was just the closest city where they came and reported it. I mentioned earlier David Flynn. He went out there with a team of researchers, I think it was in 2005, with some GPS equipment and stuff, and they determined that the location where the crash took place was at 33.33 degrees north latitude, and when they calculated, they multiplied that location by the universal constant of pi, it gave them the longitude 104 of where they were standing. And I talked about this at some length in my Mount Hermon Roswell Connection DVD, so you might want to check that out, going into more detail on the connection between Mount Hermon and everything that took place in the Genesis 6 experiment and what happened in 1947 and has continued to this day. How many of you have ever heard of this book right here, the Urantia book? Anybody? Well, a couple people. It's not something many people are very familiar with. The Urantia book originated in Chicago sometime between 1924 and 1955. The authorship remains unverified. The authors introduced the word Urantia as the name of the planet Earth and are portrayed as superhuman personalities delivering a series of revelations meant to, get this, correct the errors and omissions of the Bible. It's a very dangerous book. I'm actually convinced it's probably the most evil book on the planet. And the reason is because first of all, it's a 2,000-page thick book. This is it right here. It's a very thick, large book. It's got those Bible-type pages, really thin pages. A lot of information in this book. A lot of it may be true. There was a lot of things in here that were scientific that were not known at the time it was written, that were later discovered, that seemed to validate some of the things in it. But, you know, how many of you know that even if it's 99% true, it's that 1% that'll kill you? Right, the 1% of rat poison that's inserted in there. You know, where they take off and go off the biblical page and start saying stuff that actually contradicts the Bible, you know, with all the convincing stuff that's in there, when they throw in that seed of doubt, that's very bad. It's poison. The Urantia Foundation is a U.S.-based nonprofit group, first published the Urantia book in 1955. That's when it became available to the public. But it was in existence prior to 1955 in certain circles, many think in circles of government. And we have in 1952, from July 12th through July 29th, there was a rash of UFO sightings in the skies over our nation's capital. You could look this up if you're not familiar with it. A very interesting UFO flap took place right over our Capitol building in 1952. And that prompted the creation of Project Blue Book. Project Blue Book. Okay, when this book first came out, it didn't have the fancy cover you see up there on the PowerPoint. This is the way it came out. Okay, Project Blue Book, which started in 1952, was one of a series of systematic studies of UFOs conducted by the U.S. Air Force. The first two projects were called Project Sign and Grudge. So many people think Project Blue Book was actually named after the Urantia book that talks about these extraterrestrials that named our planet Urantia. And there's also this interesting connection here. It's said that Gene Roddenberry was inspired by the Urantia book to create the Star Trek series. How many of you have ever heard of the Klerksdorp spheres? Anybody? These are very interesting things. You see right there, it's spherical. It says the Klerksdorp spheres are small objects, often spherical or disc-shaped, that have been collected by miners and rock hounds. They found it, and supposedly, you know, these are evolutionists, you know, so they talk in terms of billions of years. Supposedly 3-billion-year-old rock deposits. They found these things. Well, they were digging, I don't know if it was a diamond mine or a gold mine or whatever, but they're digging deep in the earth, and in supposedly 3-billion-year-old deposits, they found these curious little artifacts here. Many people have talked about them, but just off the top of your head, looking at that, what does that look like to you? Something you may have seen in pop culture before, in a movie maybe. What does it look like? Death Star. Exactly. That's exactly what it looks like. It looks just like the Death Star. Death Star on the left, the Klerksdorp sphere on the right, and in the middle is a moon of Saturn, the moon Iapetus. You have to wonder what George knew, because these things were found after George created Star Wars. And the moon Iapetus is very curious. It's kind of like our moon. One side of our moon faces the Earth at all times. We can't see the other side of our moon. Same thing with Iapetus. We can only see one side of Iapetus from the Earth, and it's not that side. That side became known to us when the Cassini space probe went out to Saturn, took a little ride around the backside of Iapetus, and took a picture of it. And that's what they found. Iapetus happens to have a 60,000-foot-high wall going across its equator. And many scientists have looked at that and said, if there's anything in our solar system that appears to be an artificial construct, it is the moon Iapetus. That just so happens to look like the Death Star. And when Cassini continued to fly around Saturn, took a little ride over the top of Saturn, it saw that the north pole of Saturn, which is often associated with Satan, has a hexagon-shaped formation rotating at its north pole. That's not a shape you typically find in nature. And on the south pole, there is what looks like the all-seeing eye rotating on the south pole. The all-seeing eye on the bottom and the hexagon on the top. Very, very bizarre, with the Death Star orbiting around it, apparently. We have on the planet Mars, the Cydonia region, some people call it the city complex, of pyramidal-like structures there, and of course the face on Mars. You've heard many people probably talk about that. Mars also has a potato-shaped moon orbiting it that has a very large monolithic structure on it that people like astronaut Buzz Aldrin has gotten on mainstream news and said, we got to get out there and figure out what that is.
We should go boldly where man has not gone before. Fly by the comets, visit asteroids, visit the moon of Mars. There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once in 7 hours. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? Who put that there?
There's a lot of strange things out in space in our solar system, and some of it's making its way here to our planet. There's been a rash of UFO sightings, more and more increasing. It's becoming, we're seeing it on mainstream news reports now. It used to be back in like 70s, 80s, even maybe 90s, there was always that whack job out in the field somewhere that, you know, you could floss his teeth with rope, and you'd say, I got abducted by aliens, they took me up in a spaceship, you know? And there's always the weirdo. It's like, yeah, people travel for billions of light years and they come and take you. You know, why do they take Einstein or something, you know? So, you know, it used to be tinfoil hat stuff. But now, everybody's seeing this stuff. You know, it used to be a big joke to talk about mile-wide spaceships parking over cities until a mile-wide spaceship parked over Stephenville, Texas in 2008. And everybody saw it. You know? Stuff's happening. This right here was a UFO that shut down an airport in China a couple years ago. I put together in that Mount Herman Roswell DVD, there's an 8-minute montage that includes live video footage of that. 8-minute montage in that DVD. Since then, a whole lot more have happened. I'm going to have to redo that one, update it with some more stuff. We're seeing a lot of UFO activity. And as my friend L.A. Marzulli is fond of saying, he says, UFOs are real, burgeoning, and not going away. He's right. They are real, they are burgeoning, and they're not going away. We're going to have to deal with it. How many churches are preaching about this? So people have questions, right? Where are they supposed to be able to get the answers? We're supposed to have a ready defense for everything, right? Well, if we're not addressing this stuff, where are they going to go to get their answers? Ancient aliens, right? That's where everybody's tuning in to the History Channel. Right now, I'm telling you, fallen angel activity is increasing, and it's only going to get worse as the days draw closer to the time of Christ's return. I like something else that L.A. Marzulli says. He says, rebuke first and ask questions later. You don't want to see these things. You know, a lot of people are curious. They want to see these things. No, you don't. I don't believe that they're aliens from Arcturus or Orion or any place like the Pleiades or whatever. No, we're talking about fallen angels. We're talking about demons. This is all Genesis 6 stuff happening as it was in the days of Noah. And not only did the UFO activity get a kickstart in the mid to late 1940s, but that was also the beginning of the nuclear age. We started splitting atoms and things like that. And from 1945 to 1998, 2,053 nuclear bombs were blown up on this planet. 2,053 nuclear bombs. What is that doing to our atmosphere? And even worse, some physicists wonder, what's that doing to the fabric of time and space? Some suggested it could be ripping holes in the fabric of time and space, maybe allowing entities to come through it. And how many of you have ever heard of this individual here, Phil Schneider? Anybody? A couple people here in the front row. Do a Google search on Phil Schneider. if you want to go down a rabbit hole. He died in 1996. Previous to his death, he had been on tour across the United States speaking out about various subjects, including his involvement with building DUMs. Have you ever heard of DUMs, deep underground military bases? That's what they call them. A lot of these things showing up around this country and around the world. During this time, he was working on a secret underground base in Dulce, New Mexico. He was working on a project for the military. During this time, he said that he had an encounter with a violent ET underground, a whole race of them apparently, in the late 70s. He apparently shot at a so-called alien, and it shot back, taking off several of his fingers, messing him up pretty bad. He's pretty messed up physically. Like I said, Google him. Listening to him makes one wonder if there is some sort of war taking place underground, and maybe that's why we've blown up so many subterranean nukes. We had a lot of nukes of the 2053 that were blown up above ground, but they blew an awful lot up underground as well. And when you listen to people like Phil Schneider, you have to wonder if maybe there was something more going on underground than what we were taught. So just putting it out there for your consideration. Then you have this interesting structure in the Vatican. In Paul VI's audience hall, this is a sculpture done by an artist named Fazzini in 1977. He calls it the Resurrection and explains that it's Jesus ascending out of the crater of a nuclear bomb. I'm like, I don't know what Bible he's reading. I don't remember anything about that in my Bible. Maybe it's a different Christ, like an Antichrist coming up out of the bottomless pit. I mean, could this represent the false prophet and the Antichrist? You know, the false prophet, Petrus Romanus, as Tom Horn and Chris Putnam would put it. I don't know, but it's a very bizarre structure in the Vatican depicting a giant coming up out of the crater of a nuclear bomb. So could the Nephilim be inspiring us to do this nuclear thing? I think so. Look at how much evil is associated with that. All right, so again, the last days equal the days of Noah. As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be at the coming of the Son of Man. The days of Noah versus Jared, again, the days of Jared were marked by the creation of angel-human hybrids, whereas the days of Noah were marked by the creation of animal-human hybrids, which brings us to a discussion of transhumanism, which I believe is a doctrine of devils. We see in Genesis chapter 3, verses 4 and 5, "And the serpent said unto the woman, Ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." You see a few promises of the serpent here. Three of them. A promise of immortality. A promise that their eyes will be open, they'll have greater wisdom and understanding. And you shall be as gods. You know what's interesting about these three promises? Adam and Eve already had all three. They were already immortal. Death didn't come until after they sinned. Your eyes shall be open, greater wisdom and understanding. They walked with God every day. How much more wisdom and understanding do you need? Hey, God, how did the Milky Way come about?
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, in trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.